Okay.
The one I put into the hoo-ha.
Dude, any day, babe. Hoo-ha is open.
You know that we're recording and that could end up as a cold open. Not bad. Ladies. Hey, everyone. Welcome to Gen X Stories, a podcast about how the so-called lost generation found itself. We are your hosts, Eve, Lori, and Courtney. Chris is deep in moving hell. So we send him good vibes to get through it and find his mic. And we will see him once he is all set up. Today, we are talking about the filmmaker John Hughes, the guy who brought us some of the best Gen X films ever. Who was he? Why do we still gravitate to his films? And really, does anyone today come close to the role he played in our lives growing up? Oh, and we have our top three favorite John Hughes films, as does our Facebook group. All right, kids, on with the show. Hi!
Hello.
Hey.
Wow.
Hey, baby.
That gets the 976 voice out of Courtney when we're talking about John Hughes.
That's not sure why.
ASMR.
Oh, no, not to back to that.
Yeah, no, we're not doing that. But John Hughes, we talked about this on an episode, I think, of what movie is a typical Gen X movie. There's a lot of ways to go. Things that you didn't know were John Hughes films. Like I didn't know. Again, crack research. I didn't know Uncle Buck, for example, was John Hughes.
I didn't know Beethoven was. I'm looking
right,
at
neither.
This list.
That's a new one.
Curly Stew.
Did not know that one either.
What, so between like directing and writing, he did a lot of different things. The ones that we know about are
he did
what?
National Lampoon's Vacations, the whole series.
At least the first couple of them. We know Breakfast Club. We mm-hmm. know Pretty in Pink and 16 Candles. Mm-hmm. And
some kind of Wonderful.
And Ferris Bueller's Day Off.
I did not know that was him.
You did? Wait.
What?
You've made it to this age without knowing that was him.
I'm today.
Oh, my
old.
God.
Who did you think did
I
that?
I don't know. I don't know.
Okay.
I loved She's Having a Baby, though.
I did, too. I listed a bunch of them.
Curly Sue, Beethoven, Home Alone.
All the Home Alones.
Weird Science, The Great Outdoors. Oh, Planes, Trains and Automobiles. I don't know why I love that movie so much. It's a very sweet movie.
The only thing I remember about Planes, Trains and Automobiles is John Candy looking over Steve Martin mm-hmm. saying, mm-hmm. those aren't two pillows. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Obviously, we have favorites. You liked a whole bunch of unusual ones, Laurie. Like, I mean, She's Having a Baby is something that I love, is actually apparently drawn from his real life. Reading some of his history, he was an ad guy who was unfulfilled in his life, and then he ended up in movies. It sounds like he's developed his characters based on things that we've all experienced and that he experienced to some degree, even though he's not really Gen X, like the outcasts. It's Long Duk Dong in 16 Candles, who really doesn't fit in anywhere, but he gets his girlfriend.
What's happening?
And we're not going to talk about how those movies could not be made now. What?
Which is true. I gave my panties to a geek.
No, right?
Not going to happen.
Right? So this happened in our teenage years, teenage into 20s, that a lot of these movies came out. And we repeat lines that now, if you heard your child say, what would you do?
I would say, my job is done.
My job. If they gave their panties to a geek from 16 Candles, you would say, my job is done.
Yes.
Wow.
Okay. I'd be like, the Gen X inoculation is done.
Yeah.
Wow. So what was it about those movies that we loved so much back in the day?
Well, I mean, I don't think we're saying anything we all don't know. They have universal themes.
Yeah.
They are about people that you like who are struggling, right?
Okay.
And so the non-typical hero is the lead. So everyone can relate. Later on, they did sort of John Hughes-esque films. And it was always like the hot girl who wore glasses and overalls became prom queen, right? But John Hughes was unique because he really gave characters honesty and depth. So you could really understand and relate to them. Even though they're silly films, there's always truth in there. Always.
Always. Yeah, we've talked about The Breakfast Club so much, but I think that's one of the reasons because he got all the stereotypes.
Yeah.
And you could see yourself in one of those kids mm-hmm. to some degree.
Stereotype or archetype?
Ooh, I like archetype
both.
Better.
Ooh, yes, archetype.
Sorry. Yes.
Which of the archetypes were you in there? Or did you cross them? Like, were you a combo of
I
two?
I think we all crossed at some point,
a little bit
right?
of everybody, kind of,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, and I think that was kind of maybe the point.
We know who you were, Eve.
Who?
Oh, Claire. Claire.
Come on. You're such a princess.
Oh, you're
like, I was
so
a mix between Ali Sheedy and like I was a mix.
That's so funny because I see myself purely as Ali Sheedy's character.
No.
What?
Hello?
No.
Please.
I am a Claire.
Oh my God. You think I'm a Claire? Jesus Christ.
Yeah.
Well, your parents treated you like a Claire.
They did. Yes. They did. But I had the thoughts of Ally Sheedy, which is when you grow up, your heart dies.
There, I think that's an interesting comment. Like at the in the home, you were Claire, but your experience of the world was
what's her name?
Oh my God, what was her name?
It's what is Ally her name?
Sheedy. I'm looking it up. I'm looking it up. Remember
who did Ally Sheedy play?
Because remember
Allison.
Allison, thank you.
I was an Allison. I can't sort of put my finger on which one of them you guys were.
I'm a mix.
Although when I first met you, Court, I would have thought you were a Claire.
Oh, good, good. Sorry, I masked well. I masked my Allison well. I looked like I was put together.
You did. You look, and you were preppy too, which is so what Claire was.
Wow,
she Lori, was
prep.
I was probably more of Estevez's character with the sports, but just make it a girl.
Sporty. Okay,
nice. Yeah, that was me.
With Chris not here, should we tell everyone who we think Chris is? I don't think he's any of them, to be honest.
He's the guy at the end that does this. John Nelson. Thank you. God.
I think he's John Bender, like a feminist John Bender. So Breakfast Club, I think, hit a lot of us in different ways. We've talked in another episode that I wasn't allowed to watch Pretty in Pink. I do not know why.
What the hell was wrong with Pretty in Pink?
I do not know.
I need you to research that. Wow. Ask Michelle.
But I saw 16 Candles, which I think is probably worse.
Oh, it's totally worse than Pretty in Pink.
Than Pretty in Pink.
Oh, God,
that's that's the panties one. I gave my panties to a geek one.
Well, and that was the like hardcore partying.
And the potential rape scene when they gave the girlfriend away to the geek.
Oh, in the car.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
They were all PG. Like, I wasn't allowed to see R, but.
Yeah,
like,
me neither. PG. But PG.
And because you were a goody two-shoe, you didn't.
Because I was a Claire.
You were sneak in. Like, dude, I totally saw Risky Business at 12. Something I was thinking about is like 16 Candles was about all the kids that were struggling, mm-hmm. right? And trying to navigate. You had the girl that had like the scoliosis brace. You had the transfer student who didn't speak the language. You had Molly Ringwald playing the younger sister who was sort of overlooked, but was a nice person, had a sincere crush on a guy. And you had all these other like characters around them that represented everyday people in a way. I mean, obviously in a heightened sense for the movie. And what I think is such an interesting contrast to 16 Candles is the joyous, unabashed confidence of Ferris Bueller. Right. Mm. Where everything goes right for him.
Right.
Oh,
he does outrageous things. He breaks all the rules and it all goes well. But you still like him. He's not a jerk about it.
Right.
You're still rooting for him. And in his chaos and what he does, like other people grow up, like his little sister breaks out of her shell and other things happen. But I just think there's such an interesting juxtaposition between those two. Because if you watch them back to back, right, I just found those two always like as a companion piece.
How long it took Hughes to write the first draft of Ferris Bueller?
It's a day or something, 3 days?
A day.
A day, yeah.
He wrote the whole thing in
Stream
one day?
Stream of consciousness.
He just wrote it. Yeah.
Wow.
And then I'm sure they refined it and stuff like that. Were there some harder topics that came up in John Hughes films that we saw and it impacted
like
us?
Cameron and his dad in Ferris Bueller.
Yes.
Right? Cameron has a terrible relationship with his father.
Yeah.
He's full of anxiety. I mean, this is what would speak to anybody even today. He's full of anxiety.
Yes.
Wealthy kid, but left alone. Like, baby. That's a trope that's universal across time.
Right. Alan Ruck has become pretty well known in
lots of ways. He's the actor who played Cameron.
He was in
Succession.
Succession.
Yeah. He was so good. Yeah.
He's so good.
It's also interesting. They show the picture of Cameron's house with the car. And it's like right above all the grassy leaves and where the car eventually goes out the window.
Yeah.
And there's a meme saying everybody knows what this house is.
Mm-hmm.
Because the second you see it, you know.
Glass is going to break.
Trouble so on the horizon. I loved Some Kind of Wonderful.
Yeah. Let's talk about that one. Because I think it doesn't get a lot of talk.
Sweet.
Mm-hmm.
He didn't direct it, but he wrote it. So what about that movie got you? Because it's one of my favorites, to be honest. I loved Watts, which is why I'm like, why do you think I'm Claire? Because I loved fucking Watts.
Are you serious?
Well, you said within Breakfast Club, so we had to pick within Breakfast Club, girl.
I wanted to be Watts. Yeah.
You wanted to have a diamond earring and play the drums.
I did. And black.
Really
and black,
cute, short black.
Really
haircut.
Cute.
Really cute.
Yeah, because I always put myself into his movies.
I think we all did. Right? Yeah.
That's the fun. So not having a boyfriend, but having a best friend who is a boy.
Yeah.
But then he never notices me. And I'm just sitting there drumming away and loving him. That said something to me.
I think we could all relate to Watts at some point in our life. Having that unrequited love of your best friend.
Yeah.
I did.
You did?
Yeah, we all did. We all had a best friend we had a crush on. Everybody did.
Absolutely.
There were big themes in Some Kind of Wonderful. I mean, that was a major theme, but there was saving for college. which is what the boy took all the money out to give something to the girl he ever ended up not even with, but he gave it to Watts. Talk about the father not understanding the kid.
Well, it was a lot of money. It's a great movie.
A lot of these movies have come back into streaming. John Hughes have sort of longevity. That's another thing that I think is interesting about his films, that we could have loved them when we were 15 and we love them when we're 55.
So it's universal tropes. It's like great writing. Like people love a book that stands the test of time. It stands the test of time because what's being talked about is universal. It can be applied to anyone at any time of their life, and you can see reality in it, even if it's heightened, right?
Yeah. Because I mean, there's still Breakfast Club kids in high school today, right? It's still relatable,
right? The television show Glee was basically taking a page out of John Hughes.
It was the different, not stereotypes, what'd you call them? Archetypes. It was different archetypes. Look at us. We're bringing all like erudite in our 50s.
How many dites can we bring in?
Do you have another date?
Indictment? One. No, I don't know.
Different conversation.
So the other movies were interesting. Weird Science. I never really got into Weird Science. But again, I don't think it was meant for me. It was meant for boys.
Yes, for sure.
Yeah.
The two geeky boys who created their vision of a woman with the big boobs and the little waist, and she wasn't real. I wouldn't see that one again. But those two geek boys who show up in 16 Candles, I watch because they're part of that whole ensemble, one of which is John Cusack.
Oh my God, I forgot. He was so great.
Did you guys watch Weird Science, or was it not your thing?
Oh, I did.
You did?
Yeah, I did. It was at the time.
Yeah, it was there.
I still remember a lot of it.
You don't have lines, though. Like, I can repeat lines from the other movies. No. I can't do that for Weird Science.
There's so many great lines from, like, all the film. Anytime something's happening, and I just turn to someone and I say, Bueller.
Yep.
Bueller. And, you get it. Like, it's a cultural phenomenon that your generation, and every generation has these kind of tropes, but there's certain things, and it's surprising how much come from these John Hughes films.
Right. And that's a commonality.
Cultural experience, right?
Yeah.
It's a cultural currency for our generation.
There you go. Look at you.
Cultural currency for our generation. There's moments that are touchstones for us, that identify us.
Other ones that are on here. So you mentioned you were surprised by National Lampoon Vacation.
I had no idea
that he wrote that.
I didn't like those.
I didn't either.
Like that sort of slapstick humor.
Well, what's interesting is that he went to National Lampoon when they were writing their magazine. And he learned that kind of humor, which I guess then went right into Vacation.
That makes sense now. That makes more sense.
Does anyone else know stories about John Hughes?
Hey, you're our research guru.
Oh, y'all can't do the research?
I didn't.
Well,
I like John Hughes. How's that?
So John Hughes died very young.
Yes.
He died in his 50s, I believe. You didn't know that, Cord?
No.
Yeah, look it up.
He was 59.
Yeah,
look it up. I've got his wiki page up.
Okay, 59 is almost 60.
But still, that's very young.
That's young. We did talk a little bit about the fact that he is older than us. So it was like, how did he have the thumb on Gen X when he himself wasn't Gen X?
I think he had the thumb on his growing up.
Yeah. What year was he born?
He was born in 1950. Dude.
So there was an idealized vision. He grew up with Leave It to Beaver.
Yeah.
That's all that stuff. And if you worked in advertising, you have to be pretty current with the culture of the time. So he took what he knew from his experiences and translated it into the time period in which we are living. They're very of the moment current films.
Yeah.
Right. They're of that time. And so that makes sense to me.
He also apparently was a little bit of a recluse. He didn't like to give interviews. Mm. There's one interview that he gave. One of the films was being honored by the AFI and someone
American
taped it.
Film Institute.
So I'll put that link up there. There's an article that I have here, which is 6 filmmaking tips from John Hughes.
Mm.
Oh,
I'll read you what they are, which I think actually may be some of the reasons we love it so much. So one is write what you care about. Second thing is screenplays are always unfinished. And he says when a book is written, it's a final product. But where the script is finished, it really is a blueprint. Because I heard stories about that shoot for Ferris Bueller in Chicago that he was impossible to deal with because he wanted to keep reshooting. And it was expensive as fuck to do that. So I can see why that didn't make him popular. Number 3 is a good comedy consists of all kinds of comedy. Things that we may not think is funny, he found the humor in.
But I think it's nice because it's like there's intellectual funny, there's slapstick funny, there's snarky funny, there's situational funny, there's heartfelt funny. And I think that is part of why the films hold up. Because right? It's not just hitting the same note over and over again.
Then something I also think is unique to him. Respect the characters. Respect the audience.
Ooh. Respect the audience.
Don't dumb down.
Don't dumb down. That's exactly what I was thinking. When you said respect the audience, I was like, yep.
And it says here, one of the reasons Hughes was so successful with his teen movies and why they remain so popular with each new generation of kids is that they're honest and respectful to and about their characters that turn into audiences.
Nice.
I think he told the truth about what we were going through.
Yeah. When we were talking about Gen X films and why John Hughes films always move to the top, it's because of that authenticity.
Yes.
Yeah,
authenticity, Gen Xers, authenticity.
Right.
I remember, I think my dad must have gone with me to see Breakfast Club because he said at the end, every parent should see this.
Yeah. I didn't go with my parents. I'm so glad your dad went with you. When you say John Hughes, a lot of people go right to Breakfast Club, but if you remember when we were growing up, there were Peanuts. And the Peanuts kids all had the parents, and you never hear the parents. So it's like, wah, wah,
wah, wah, wah, wah, wah.
And this is the kids are going even deeper into it. We never hear the parents. We see them pick them up. It's expanding on that. And it's like, I don't want to say it's us versus them, but as a kid who's hormonal and doesn't want to deal with their parents at all, that movie spoke to me because of that.
Well, I also think John Hughes, I don't know if he initiated the genre, so someone smarter than me can answer this in the Facebook group, but we didn't have a ton of films that were about teen, that were about our age group or around our age group, because everything was focused on the adult experience. You'd have one or two films like, Rebel Without a Cause,
right? Which are older.
Like that. That all existed.
Yeah.
But this was just like of the time, everyday life.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And being treated, like you said earlier, with respect. That was unique for us.
And the understanding of the challenges, like the scenes for 16 Candles in the gym. Holy shit. Who didn't go to the dance where you're like, what do I do? And does he like me?
Yes.
Lori's rolling her eyes. Why are you rolling your eyes?
No, because I remember those dances
right?
in the gym.
And the girls are sitting on the side and then the guy you don't want to come over comes over.
Yep.
The boy you love is dancing with another girl. As a girl's school, I didn't have a whole lot of that. We had to import boys to get that to happen, which was terrible. We did.
So that you could both sit on opposite
ride to
sides.
Bryn Mawr, right? Get on.
The girl's always on one side and the boy's on the other.
Yeah. So then the number five on this list, which the fact that we are, 40 years later, still talking about it. His point was build and take care of a fan base.
Mm-hmm.
Because we haven't let it go for all this time. In addition to being true to his audience, Hughes was very focused on building a core fan base of mostly young people who loved his honest teen movies and would follow him through every release.
Okay.
And then number six on this is actors are sacred. And he said below is part of an audio from a 1985. This is the AFI Q&A during which he discusses his transition to making movies, his screenwriting experiences and process, and the making of 16 Candles and Breakfast Club, as well as they have such unrealistically happy endings. So I'm going to post that link to that interview, which is sort of fascinating when you learn a little bit more about him. I will tell you, based on that and also based on that, some of the things that I read, he wasn't a tremendously happy person. And some of that stuff, I think, comes out in the conflicts of the kids, which is also whether it's authentic to us or whether he meant it to be from an actor standpoint, a character standpoint. He also got a little reclusive. He hadn't written movies in a while before he died, which makes me a little sad.
He sure made a lot of people happy.
Are there any filmmakers now that come close to John Hughes in terms of building an audience, in terms of kids gravitating and saying, this is me? Is there anything like that?
It is such a different world now.
Yeah.
And the embarrassment and riches of choice have changed that landscape. And
what do you mean, riches of choice?
For Gen Zers. I can't speak to like the millennials, but I can speak to the Gen Zers. There is so much available on all of the streaming services. And it's constantly changing. It's adjusting to your algorithm. It's a wide variety of stuff. I think if you have a girl, Bridgerton is hitting that mark because you have girls experiencing the world, even though it's the 1800s, experiencing the world from different perspectives, right? You have all different shapes and sizes, different intellectual interests. And so a lot of different girls can see themselves in the different characters. So I think Bridgerton and Shonda does that. But I think there's a lot of kids are on TikTok.
Not movies, so short right? videos.
And because you can watch everything independently of each other and you can stream it on your phone, you can watch it anytime you want. The sharing of a unique voice. I don't know that I could identify one person for what I've observed so far. I don't know know, creatively, that there's a lot of opportunity now for someone like John Hughes to exist.
Why not?
Because the studio system changed. So the studio system used to be its own. Now most of the studios, who are the banks for funding films, those studios are now mostly part of multinational corporations. So they are a small part of a conglomerate and they need to make profit. And the way to make profit is to have existing IP, intellectual property, which is why you see all these like superhero films or something from a book or something. Or a game. There's a lot of games that are turned movies because it's existing IP. You have a fan base already, easy to market, so it costs less money. And they become sort of like these tentpole events to get people into the movie theaters.
Interesting.
Netflix kind of turned that on its head by offering programming, but it was mostly geared to adults because adults are the ones that are going to pay the subscription. So the whole landscape has changed.
Mm-hmm. That's true.
Mm-hmm. Although I did Google the question just because I was curious to see what would come up.
What came up?
I said, what is the modern day John Hughes? So some of these movies I've never even heard of. The Perks of Being a Wallflower.
Yes, great film, but a one-off.
Right? Yeah.
The Edge of 17, mm-hmm. Juno, for bad.
So these are all great movies, but it's not a John Hughes career.
Correct. Napoleon Dynamite, Easy A.
Yes.
Mean Girls.
Tina Fey has developed her fan base.
And Tina Fey is one of us, I believe.
But she's not constantly writing for the teen market.
No.
But not with that kind of prolific output.
You guys know the songs that are referenced in Easy A are all 80s songs.
I've never seen the movie.
Oh my God.
What?
I'll watch it with you.
You have to see that one.
It's a great little film.
That one is actually a good throwback to John Hughes movies. Because she's like, why isn't my life like a John Hughes movie?
Mm-hmm.
Are you Googling it or ChatGPTing it?
No, I Googled it.
Okay, I'm curious because ChatGPT has a mind of its own, man. So maybe there isn't somebody who is John Hughes-esque.
I tried and nothing comes up.
Wow. Does that make you guys a little sad that the young kids don't have that experience we had?
It does. Because I don't think there's great programming. Don't get mad at me for saying this. I'm sure there is. But I will say this, raising a boy, there's a lot of stuff for girls.
Mm.
Not as much for boys. It's
other
a struggle.
Other than superhero, probably.
Right.
Correct.
I think that's interesting with John Hughes movies, too. Chris would have had an interesting insight about those movies. He did say that he loved Breakfast Club.
Yes.
For a boy. But if you look at like all of those movies that John Hughes did, girls gravitated to most of those.
Well, the boys' characters were richly drawn. Like, there's always a Ducky. There's always a Blaine.
Ducky.
There's always Andrew McCarthy. Yeah, the guys could relate as well. There were rich characters. Yeah. I mean, there's three guys and two girls in Breakfast Club.
That's right.
The rebel, the geek, and the sports.
We forget about the sports guy. I'm glad that Laurie brought him up because we always think about the geek and the rebel.
And then Ally Sheedy rips off his letter.
Yes.
Because she steals it. We asked this question again. Our Facebook group always has some interesting things. We asked them their favorite John Hughes movie. And Timothy Smith said, for me, it's clearly Breakfast Club. I argue it might be Hughes' most popular Brat Pack movie. It certainly was influential and using character stereotypes touched virtually an entire generation. They were someone everyone identified with, had a crush on, or wished they were in the film. And then he did talk about Planes, Trains, and Automobiles. It's a fun gem. Steve Martin and John Candy are a great duo with the writing making an impossible scenario relatable and worth suspending disbelief. And then Jacqueline Underwood, who I was on her podcast, and I did her website. Some Kind of Wonderful was a twist on Pretty in Pink. Pink gave us the poor pretty girl who was adored by her male best friend, but is wild about the preppy guy and gets the dream boy in the end. Well,
which, by the way, was a change to the ending. Originally, John Hughes wrote it that she didn't get it, and Ducky comes to save the day.
That's right. That's right. And they had to be.
Audiences were so upset.
Yes.
Which always pisses me off.
The ending.
That always pisses me off about Pretty in Pink because anyone who looks closely, McCarthy is wearing a wig.
Yes.
In that last scene because he had cut his hair short for another movie and they had to go back and do the refilm for the ending that everyone wanted where she ended up with Blaine.
Blaine.
Not a major name.
Not a name.
Who was the bad guy?
No.
Blaine was
Andrew McCarthy.
Andrew McCarthy. Mm-hmm.
Yes. And to that point, Andy Cosgrove said Spader deserved a best supporting actor nod.
Yes. Spader should be. I mean, we could do a whole podcast on Spader.
Oh my God.
I just want to add, it wasn't written by John Hughes, but I think it's part of this genre is St. Elmo's Fire.
Oh, God, yes.
And everybody thinks it was written by him, and it's not.
Yeah, it's Joel Schumacher.
It's a Brat Pack.
John Hughes can do it. I can do it.
Right. Know? And he did it.
And he did.
And it includes, by the way, Emilio, Allie, and Judd.
Same people.
Three of the characters of Breakfast Club are stars in that movie.
Right.
Yep.
Yep. Which is why it's so interesting that back in the day, we were so used to John Hughes that we just, of course, those people were going to be a John Hughes trio.
Correct.
Yes.
They didn't realize that movie wasn't John Hughes for a long time because people just assumed that that's part of the universe, and it's absolutely not. Okay, we've been doing top threes for things. Do you guys have a top three for your favorite John Hughes movies?
Absolutely.
Okay, Courtney, what are your top threes?
Well, I think 16 Candles and Ferris Bueller. I love that dynamic. And then, of course, for me, it's Breakfast Club. Because there's so many memories around it. I remember watching, like we talk about this group experience of Gen Xers, like you have to go together and be in person. And we watched it on VHS tape at someone's house. And like there was, I still remember vividly, like looking across the room at the guy I liked and so much emotion tied to that connective social dynamic of watching that film and then watching it over and over again over through the years. I just love it.
Okay. Lori, what are your top three?
Breakfast Club, Pretty in Pink. 16 Candles or... Right. No. 16 Candles or Ferris. I don't know.
I thought you liked She's Having a Baby.
I do, but it's not top three. It's so funny. See, there, I have like a top 10, top five.
See, because
that's the problem, right?
And that's the deal with someone who was that prolific, because there's so many movies you can choose from. I think it's sort of fascinating that Breakfast Club is on all of ours, because Breakfast Club is always going to be on the list for me. Some Kind of Wonderful is definitely on the list for me.
Such a good one.
And now I have to think about whether it is 16 Candles or She's Having a Baby. I think I'm going to go with She's Having a Baby, because it crossed over from not just pure rom-com to there's some serious shit in that movie. And learning now that there was some actual reality behind that, I'm a backstage girl. What can I say? So those would be my top three.
Okay.
Just to be clear, you said backstage, not backdoor girl.
Shit. Go back to your 976 voice.
Hello, Eve.
Wow.
I have someone behind door number two for you.
Oh my God.
Wow. Okay. Well, you've just given us our outro. Because I can't beat that.
Nope.
All right. Well, then that's it for us this week.
Wait. We have to end on the famous John Hughes quote. Life moves pretty fast. If you don't stop and look around once in a while, you could miss it.
Bingo. That is it for us this week. Thank you for listening to Gen X Stories. Drop us a note at hello@genxstories.com and we may do some shout outs like we did on a future episode. And we have merch. It's really cool. Go check it out on our website at genxstories.com. You can also subscribe to Gen X Stories on your favorite podcast app. Write us a fabulous review because we love that. Follow us on Instagram at Gen X Stories or join our ever-growing Facebook group. We all have a Gen X story. What's yours?